Hey there, Shopomaniacs. You are listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show podcast, all about front-end web design and development. I'm Dave Rupert, and it's just me today because we have a very special episode. We were invited to Smashing Conf Live, where we gave a cloud business webinar, and we are excited that we are able to bring that to you today, a live recording of the webinar. You will probably, a little bit of housekeeping, you will probably want to go to get the slides over at MyNotist, noti.st/Davatron5000, DAVATRON5000. That's going to have the slide deck for the webinar. It'll bring everything into context for the webinar before the Q&A. Thanks to Vitaly and the gang for having us on. Smashing Comps are always a lot of fun, a lot of good high energy there. And we'll be doing another live show at Smashing Conf Austin. It's not really in Austin, so it's like virtual Austin, but whatever. It'll be fun, October 13th and 14th. So please join us there. Find out more at smashingconf.com/Austin-2020. Smashingconf.com has a link in the header. So without further ado, here it is, our webinar on the Shop Talk Marketing Cloud.
Are we live, Dave?
I think we're live. Hello, welcome, Shopomaniacs. Welcome to the Shop Talk Marketing Cloud webinar. We're here to talk about life business changing software. Step one. Oh man, clicker. Oh boy. Okay, okay. Escaping system pitfalls. Chris?
Our software has charting and single sign-on.
We believe you can achieve your customer velocity today.
If these charts don't convince you, our backwards compatible enterprise product solution will. Log on to our portal and download our password protected PDF for compelling growth strategies and high yield human capital. Now back to Dave for more interoperable turnkey best of breed strategy supply chains.
Customer satisfaction, you bet. It's all here. We quantum improvements numbers.
Note the flexibility. We're talking no SQL here.
We can give you a one-time disposable facsimile that you'll never have to see again. If I understand correctly, this is very on trend with the industry.
Leverage that.
Okay, wrapping up. Any questions? I'm looking to the chat or the crowd. Any questions? No. High five. Yes. Synergy. Hi. Thank you so much for attending the webinar. It's 104 degrees outside, and so I'm going to take off this wool blazer. That's cool.
You're not in the wrong room, people. This is really
not a webinar. Chris, we are here at the jamstackconf.com, smashingconf.com, and this is, I said Jamstack because I want to get down, there are quite a few talks on Jamstackiness, but I want to get to the meat and potatoes here and play a little game I like to call, who won the conference?
Yeah. All right. And the best speaker award goes to.
It's a good
go. We can't do that. Or are you going to do it?
We can't choose favorites. But I did. I liked all the talks. Dan's talk was pretty good. I identified with quite a few things. Chat, I'd love to know what you really liked about it.
Well, here, I'll tell you a story. Do you want to hear one? I had to I tried to reschedule a meeting, but I couldn't. So for one little part of today's conference, I had to jump over to a Zoom call, much like this one, but just there's different people there, you know? And it was about component refactoring. It was about like, oh, we have this text field component, but we also have an input field component and they kind of do the same thing. So which one should we pick? And how should we think about the API form? Should support everything, yada, yada. And then somebody brought up this like one other use case where we use this component on the site and it didn't have a label because it was kind of like a matrix of inputs. It was this little situation. And I immediately thought of something Dan said. At one point in Dan's talk, he said, there's extremes of design systems. One extreme is, I don't care about design systems. I'm just going to code this thing up and just whatever. It's useless to me. I'm going to use 0% of a design system. That's one extreme. And the other extreme is 100%. Nothing goes into our app if it's not a part of a design system. The design system rules all. It's the most important thing. That's like 100% design system. The other extreme, and Dan's like, neither of those extremes are realistic or useful. And that not everything has to be. If there's a little one-off or something, or you need some extra creativity here or something, it's okay that not every component on your site needs to necessarily a part of the design system. And that, like, in this meeting I just had today, kind of like solved that issue. It's like, let's just not have our design system handle that particular area of the site. That'll just be a one-off and it'll just be handled on that page just how it is, you know?
Yeah. No, that's like, the more I think about design systems and build them and whatever, it's like, you know, maybe the hero unit does not go in the design system. Like, because maybe that should like change with the weather, you know, like it should be like very like creative and very like kind of just one off. Like, this is your front door, paint whatever color you want, you know, like, yeah, right on. Like, and so
line styles, you know, go crazy.
Just do it. Like, yeah. We call them web components now, but but you can you like just do a one off, like, and I like Dan's analogy of the Lego store because it was just, you know, put the high impact stuff up front, like show that stuff in even in your design system, you know, and then you go back into the back of the store, there's the
what do you call it, a signature component, was that, but that was almost was that cool or not cool? I have a feeling it was kind of like not cool, like don't work too hard on that one.
I mean, you know, and that would be like my I don't know, I guess. Yeah, like you need like your bread and butter components, and that needs to go in a section. I mean, I don't know. Alphabetical is always everyone's favorite way to browse stuff, but Dan has other ideas apparently. Yeah, that's non-alphabetical.
I have a question organization. For you. I love that your any questions slide is still up too. Let's just leave that up. That's really good.
Oh yes, we this any questions for throughout the show. We will. Happily ask questions chat. So.
Well, have you done this? This is another thing from Dan's talk. Have you ever done the sneak it in approach to a design system? Because you're kind of known for working on design systems, or at least you've done a bunch of them. Have you ever I'm not going to even use the DS word, but I'm going to say, you know, they want us to work on, you know, re-CMSing or something. Are you like, do you just slip it in as part of that work? Like the old trickerino?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, there's one, we did a site for the Austin Chamber of Commerce, which is a chamber of commerce here in Austin. And they, you know, we built the site, but we built it in components. And then it was like put into Vue, I believe, is sort of like the Vue Laravel sort of backend. But it was, and so we just delivered like front end HTML in like a Jekyll or something. And then they put it all into the, kind of view components. And then lo and behold, like, I don't know, like 2 days later, they're like, hey, we built a whole about page using the components. Is this okay? And we were like, yeah, they're yours. Like, use them.
Yeah. Like, well, that leads me to another point that front end, to me, front end development is really heading towards a componentized model. Like it's just over the place. You know, even native technology is going there, right? Components, which makes it seem like that design systems are just, you're not, you know how you, I don't know, to me at least, you get a new client or whatever, not that I do client work, but you're working on a new project, you don't have a conversation anymore about whether you're going to make it responsive or not. Of course, yes, you just are, you know? And the fact that we build everything with components, maybe it will stop being a conversation if we're going to use a design system or not. Because you're making a bunch of components, so like it or not, you made a design system, you know?
Yeah, no, and even with all these frameworks, Tailwind UI or Bootstrap or whatever, it's almost like which component from this thing do you want? Like which one expresses your values, or which one should we start with and customize, you know? And so you kind of like, you even have like a prefabs is kind of what I call them from like the video game world. You have these like prefab fabricated things that you just kind of, okay, let's see, let's start with this or something similar to this and see what it looks like. So, and yeah, we just kind of, we build in components and even code in components. Like you don't want to repeat yourself ideally, right? As a developer. So we code in components and, you know, that's, you know, the best way. But I think there is like what Dan is kind of getting at is like the nuance, right? Like know when to bail out, right? Like know when to, or like what to emphasize or when to bail out of a design system or like, you know, prioritizing what components go into the first round. Cause that's the thing too. If you a design system sit for 22 years, it's just only going to ever be 66%, you know, implemented. And so
I feel like if it sits for one day, you're already screwed. I mean, the design system should be that integrated that you're using it. I mean, Dan also said start today and never stop, or at least that was incorporated into some thoughts in some way. And I liked that because it was like, this isn't a sprint necessarily. It might be a sprint to like get it started or get some motion on it or something, but like you work in it all day, every day. It's not a thing that just is done when you're done with it.
Well, and I forget the name of the woman from Airbnb, or was it Lyft? But it was, you know, just our design system is like evolving. It is kind of like we talk to customers and we get feedback. And so we change our product based on the customer feedback. And like, you know, you need a design system that can be agile too, or like solve, meet customer needs, you know? So I think Gina's talked about that, or Dan referenced Gina as well. Just, you know, how do you meet people? It's design systems are for people. So how do you meet people with your design system? So,
yeah, isn't that interesting? That seems like that's most of the talk around design system lately has been like the technology part is not so interesting anymore. It turns out to be a people issue. I mean, we watched that happen with responsive design too, you know, like Ethan and Karen at the forefront of responsive design decide to do a podcast about responsive design, and it had nothing to do with the technology of responsive design. Every show was about what was the organizational situation like?
Yeah. And it's all about how people like were figuring this out from an organizational level. It was less, you know, people weren't like, oh man, how do media queries work? That wasn't it at all. It was all, how do we do this as a person? So,
yeah.
Hey folks, Editor Chris here. I was asked to help with this read because it's for a conference that's normally held in Canada, eh? So the conference is Web Unleashed 2020. What is Web Unleashed, you might ask? It's the ultimate three-day conference for front-end development folks. You can enhance your skills, learn new techniques, and be inspired by your peers. It's all happening October 5th to 7th, 2020, online, of course. There's an insanely great lineup of speakers like Tatiana Mack, Rachel Andrew, Kyle Simpson, Wes Boss, John Papa, Harry Roberts, Ethan Marcotte, and even ShopTalk's own Chris Coyer. Chris is going to be emceeing the first day as well as doing a special interview with Mina Markham, which should be awesome. Your Web Unleashed ticket includes 3 full days of inspired learning, plus attendance at every session, including presentations, Q&As, live chat, and breakout rooms, a dedicated Slack channel that allows you to virtually mix and mingle before, during, and after the event with other attendees and speakers, and you get 6 months of access to all the presentation videos afterwards. You'll want to get your ticket soon because you can save $100 off the ticket price with code ShopTalk. That's valid from September 14th to September 20th. Once again, use code ShopTalk during checkout to get $100 off the price of your ticket. The full ticket price is only 249 Canadian, which is less than 200 US dollars, depending on the exchange rate, of course. So the website link is in the show notes or tappable on your podcast player right now, or head over to fitc.ca for more details. Our thanks to Web Unleash for sponsoring this episode.
Well, you got to iterate on it. Wasn't that that was kind of perhaps a big core thing in Nadia Bremer's talk, right? You at least I know you keyed into that like that quality takes iteration, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're kind of like, how on an audio podcast do we talk about amazing visualizations? That's not like going to talk going to like scale well. Oh,
look at all these Skittles all over the floor. How many Skittles are there? There's Skittles.
Yes. Yeah.
There's
exactly.
Audio visualizations.
Yeah. Exactly. So this one looked like a brain, and it had, the graphics were amazing, and they like told a story. But what I found most interesting was the iteration on the graphics that she showed, and. You know, the probably quintessential one was like the lineage of royal families or whatever. Like, I just, you start with one pass at it and you're like, oh, this doesn't really, I mean, the data's there, but it's not really telling me anything. And then you like do a tweak or you like compress one side of it. And now you like, I found that iteration stuff really amazing. Or the, I'm blanking on what the other one was. Where the dances, like how they like the etymology or like the creation of dance or how they relate to each other, like the primary and secondary sort of features of the dance, it told nothing. It just looked like a ball, a tennis ball. But then you pull in the first like primary things. Yeah, the UNESCO stuff. Thank you, Jesse. But like you pull in the primary aspects, and now all of a sudden you have like data starts grouping together a lot more clearly. And it was very, I don't know.
Skill? Like what if you took, you know, cause I think there's a lot of courses. You go to LinkedIn, Lynda, whatever it is, or Front End Masters or places that are known for, there's definitely going to be courses on D3, and they might even have a whole course structure on DataViz, and you could do that, but I don't know that you'd necessarily come out of it with the sensibilities for being able to iterate and trim down and be good at this skill. And that's like, it's almost like two skills in one.
Yeah, that's what I found interesting. Like the tech stuff is like, you can spit out a graph. Like I can follow a Stack Overflow and spit out a graph, but like, how do you show something that's different? That's a different like skill, or even that's a hone skill. So, and you know, I think in our day-to-day lives, it's like, hey man, we need a graph by Tuesday. Give us the graph on the royal families, do it, you know? And you're like, oh man, okay, do the graph by Tuesday. And so you're just going to like make a nest of all the royal families, and there's your graph. But like a good graph is iterated on, and like you're just like, okay, we spit out the data, now what can we do with it, or what's
the story, what's the insight?
And I think that's, and then even just the design touch of rotating it, that was like anyway, it looked good. But it just, I thought that for me, just in my life and like prototyping and stuff like that, that really hit like a thing. I'm reading a whole book on it. Ken Kosienda talks about, he calls it creative selection, which is kind of like a Darwinism reference, but it's kind of Apple's design process and how they built Safari, how they built the iPhone, how they built the iPad, just that their like iterative process where they go kind of prototype to prototype. And they say like, how does this work? Does it look good? Does it tell us something? And so I just thought that was very, very cool. And you almost, I don't know, it's almost like artists in residency or something, you know, that more than like, I don't know, some data viz could be like that, you know, but
yeah.
But it can also be just spitting out charts if that's what you do.
I wonder if you could have the technology help you find those things by the nature of how you code it. You know, as somebody who looks at like 100 at least code pens on CodePen a day, just kind of part of my job a little bit, I've found I'm attracted to the idea of any kind of visual thing in which that gives me some controls, some knobs and stuff to turn.
Yeah,
you know, generative art uses this a lot, you know, kind of like, I don't know, what's the color palette you want it to be? How dense do you want it to be? What's the stroke weight, you know? And that instead of just like guessing that in code, build yourself some controls so you can mess around with it there. Maybe even have a randomized button, you know? Sometimes I see great things that have lots of controls be like, I don't know, just F me up, you know? Boom, boom, boom. And you can see generative art happen. But that's generative art. That same kind of concept could be applied to a data viz, I would think. And maybe through random happenstance, you'll land on beautiful things, you know. Who
knows? Yeah, I think that's how she started the talk, was like making connections through like astronomy, you know, like those are just balls of gas in the sky, you know, but for some reason we're like, no, that one's a lion and that one's a guy shooting an arrow at something.
You just did Lion King.
Yeah, I mean, they're just, that's great. I just think it's very like, I think it's great that they like, I don't know. It's just, we make connections. If you're only like, I don't know, if you just only make one layer of connection, that doesn't tell you anything. You need, and we have interactivity now with the web. I thought that was cool. So,
yeah, I think that's up your alley. You're so into prototyping and iteration and stuff. That's been rattling around in the Dave brain.
Oh, it just jingle jangles. So, and just.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by Netlify. You know them, netlify.com, the web hostest with the mostest for all your Jamstack sites. You know, sites that are hosted on a global CDN, so you pre-build as much of it as you can because it's just going to arrive to users smoking fast, and then do your logic somewhere else, you know? Don't hit a PHP file. Come on, you can do better than that. Oh, just kidding. It's just an architecture that I happen to really like and I think is kind of the future. And, you know, a lot of people have bought into it. You know how many? Well, at least a million, because they've been celebrating their 1 million developer and business milestone. Let me see where my spot in line is here. I'm sure it's not that impressive, but it's kind of cool. Lovely site here built by Sarah Drasner and friends. Which just goes through a bunch of like milestones for Netlify, which is super rad. I have to authorize the application here. It's going to tell me which place in the 1 million developers I am. When did I first put a Netlify site out? I'm number 125,143. So in the top, you know, in the top 20% there. Not bad. I'm pretty proud of that. Would have been nice to like break that sub 1,000 level, but I'm not that cool. Anyway, Netlify is a great host. They have tons of great features. Just because you're hosting a static site doesn't mean that it's just like literally only static. Of course, JavaScript can take over and do anything, and they'll help you do that a bunch. You know, one of the obvious things is just like, well, how do I process my forms then? Well, there's lots of services that can do that, including Netlify themselves. So the easiest way to handle it is just to put the Netlify attribute on your form, and then Netlify just kind of like takes it over and will process it for you and save the data and allow integrations and all that stuff. So it's pretty rad. Thanks, Netlify. Bye bye.
One thing, so next talk was Guillermo, right? Guillermo.
Yeah. Well, you said there's lots of Jamstack talk, and this was no shortage of it, yeah.
Yeah, this was sort of the core. But, you know, I think all this too kind of factors in, just because it's like, how do we iterate quickly, you know? And like Guillermo's like his, so he sort of cited like the rule of least power, or just even like, how do you like, if you have too much power, you almost get stuck, right? Like, oh, we have this gigantic CMS that does everything. But then it's like, who wants to work on it? And it's like, no one wants to work on that, right? I felt that way with like WordPress or whatever. So it's just kind of like, I think he makes the point, like, you know, if we want designers and developers to collaborate, or, you know, it all sort of ties together for me. I think like you need to kind of, like do the, like you need a static kind of component to your site, or static ish, you know? So
anyway, is it because it allows you to work on it easier, is your hypothesis there?
That's my thing. I mean, you know, I think even too, like barrier to entry is way lower, like asking, you know, designer to type next in the command line or versal, like that's easier than, okay, install MySQL, you know, like, and then run this migration and then do the, you know, like, so like lowering that barrier to entry is pretty critical, I think, to like getting something out there, you know?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you could make the argument that WordPress does that too, even though it leverages more complex technologies later. I mean, we were just talking about, we have this podcast, right? I mean, that's what we're doing, live shop talk show. Hopefully this will turn into an MP3 and we'll host it somewhere. And then we'll, you know, click some buttons, add some text, and it's going to turn into an XML file that is available at a URL that podcatchers will hit and get the latest podcast from us. You know, so we use helpers to do that. You know, I don't hand code that XML feed. I don't think most people do, although I think some people occasionally do, but
Jeremy Keith does, but
yeah, I'm sure he does. You know, so WordPress generates it for us. But when we set that up, we were all proud of ourselves. Oh God, we did it. You know, look at this plugin. This is like a nice little system. And we've even evolved it over the years. We redesigned stuff. We do data maintenance and stuff. But it's this Shop Talk Show. I hate to admit it, people out there, you might think this is our full-time job. It's far from it. We don't have, it's pretty far down the totem pole of like technology time Dave or I could put in, you know,
little
chunks here and there. And now this plugin is ancient. It's not updated anymore. It's not even on the plugin repo anymore. It's super dead.
Yeah.
And so now we're in this like, so how do we iterate on it? Well, if this was a Jamstack site, we'd find the template and we'd change it or something. It's like the barrier entry for us would be lower, but we are.
Yeah. But because it's like tied to this database and these like specific fields that have to spit out and names and what, it's like, oh man, updating that plugin is going to be a lot of work for 400 and whatever, 20 something
episodes. And the end result is a site that works the same way as it did before. Hopefully.
A lot of work.
That's the best goal.
Yeah, a lot of work to stop getting an email from the hosting company every week. Hey, your website's old. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're still going to do it at some point, but who knows what the internals of this. I mean, one of us might have to write SQL. That's not going to be fun.
That's not going to be fun. So,
anyway, so, but I, there was, you know, Kiermo's a smart guy. I love his blog, is amazing. Every time he's a big thoughts kind of guy, you know, the perfect CEO kind of guy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I like that, you know, he was talking about Versal's technical priorities, you know, put security at the top of the stack. That's wonderful. You know, availability right below that. Awesome, you know, performance right below that, all huge things, all prioritized above the kind of the DX of it all. Not that those things are all kind of tied together, but I think that's kind of neat. And then he, you know, it was a big hat tip to Jamstack saying that kind of the first three things in those lists are check for Jamstack, you know, like the security of Jamstack is nuanced, but like largely they're static files. You can't really hack into them. There's not an opportunity to do that. Availability is like these, you know, what Jamstack assumes is this global CDN network. The availability of that's going to kick ass, you know, like check. And the performance too is right there. So that's nice. I mean, it's no wonder people are flocking to that stack, even though he objected to the word stack, which I don't really blame him for. But
yeah, I thought that was interesting too. Like that Jamstack is like maybe too broad of a term, you know, I thought, you know, I like Jamstack as a term. I thought Phil Hawksworth was going to be very upset that he was going for the name, but the I do
remember it's not capitalized anymore. Phil.
Oh yeah.
Phil nixed the capitalization on Jamstack.
Okay.
Good job, Phil.
Whatever Phil wants to do, we'll do whatever Phil tells us to do.
Yeah.
All lowercase Jamstack is. Which is worse. All lowercase Jamstack is I don't know. That's like, it's maybe a broad term because you could be like, are you talking about Jekyll? Are you talking about Levity? Are you talking about Nuxt? Are you talking about Next? Are you talking about Redwood? Are you talking about, you know, something, one portion of your site or something, you know, like
in the past, a stack has been highly prescriptive and this as a stack is entirely unprescriptive. In fact, the only thing that is required, I think, for the Jamstack isn't represented there, which is the static hosting part of it.
So Jamish Perhaps, I can't do it. Yeah. Jamish stack.
Pretty cool though. And so, and then you had this thought about the rule of least power, the principle of least power. That's quoted often, isn't it? It doesn't even the HTML spec even like mandates it or has some quote in there that feels pretty philosophical for a spec, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like, what's funny, like I've literally heard it like a dozen times this week, you know, like referenced in talks or other things I've watched or whatever. And so like, I just was like, ooh, there was another mention of it, you know? And I wonder if like, you know, when somebody like you hear something 10 times, you're like, what's up with that thing I heard 10 times? Mm. I wondered like if it's, I wonder if that term is popular because things are so complex right now. You know what I mean? Like, are we like, we're like, oh, it's about the rule of least power now because everything's way too complicated. I wonder if that's what,
an extension of that is then seeing these complicated things and then being, and then having somebody who perhaps knows a simpler way to approach it, look at it, just, you know, jaw dropped, like, what the hell are you doing? You know, like, why did you, what, you know, that's crazy. And so, you know, and then the solution is to do, although, you know, there's just nuance to all that stuff. You know, I like the concept, but at the same time, it's almost like principle of like least cognitive overload or principle of practical least power or something. It's like, I know that I can make a toggle in CSS with a radio button, and is CSS automatically less powered than JavaScript? I think you'd argue that it is, right? Because like, don't do something in JavaScript that you could do in CSS, don't do something in CSS that you could do in HTML, like kind of fall down the stack is what it implies. But it's like, I find, you know, sometimes toggling a class with JavaScript is like the least cognitive overload. It's like more clear what's happening than using a check selector or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's like, it's easier just to use JavaScript. The thing so I had a question about this. I asked Jeremy Keith about it this week, but because again, I was talking about this. Okay, I am making a website. Okay, I have kids, so I'm making a website. I want to like mess with images, like Squoosh or something like that, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you know, or even like whatever. I was thinking, like, you know, when you go to a website and you want to like click the red dress and see the red dress or the blue shoe or the pink, you know, shorts, like these, like. If you wanted to image manipulate like that on the client side or whatever, I can do that in JavaScript, right? Okay. I'm pretty good at with Canvas. I can do that. I can change some pixels. Okay.
You just render every other pixel at half the size. I just, right there. It's amazing.
Yeah. So I'm good at, I can do that in JavaScript, but I'm wondering like WebAssembly is the better tool, like some sort of like, more powerful tool in my mind to do that more efficiently. But I'm wondering where that sits on the rule of least power scale. Like, because in my brain, it's a more powerful tool, right? If I'm using the rule of least power, well, I can technically do it using
nuance, because I wouldn't even know where to start. My mind did not go to WebAssembly like yours did. And even if it did go to WebAssembly, I've never written a WebAssembly thing literally ever in my life. So I wonder if that same extension falls down to other people who are like, I don't know, I made the menu open with React because I didn't even think about doing it any other way.
I don't know how jQuery works. So React worked great for this. Yeah.
You know what? It made me think of this optimizing images though, because I just did this week that I thought was fascinating. I've been using GitHub Actions more. Have you used it at all yet? It's like they're
lists. I have not. It's on my to-do list because I think I've said it on the show before, but I ported my whole blog over to 11D because I want to run like Lighthouse CI on it, you know, like kind of just check my performance as I go. But I then 1180 was like 1 second slower than Jekyll. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to switch yet for whatever dumb reason.
For build time, right?
For 1 second of build time, I didn't switch it over. So it's all sitting in a branch. It's all fine. But I 1 second of build time. And now all these posts are this has been a hot week for JavaScript build processes. But certain frameworks take upwards of 30 minutes to build a website. And I just was like, oh boy, maybe I should be a little nicer to Zach Leatherman over
we
like
have a
1 second of
great
build time,
post so. On this coming out on CSS Tricks, where this fella I'm working with took like 6 static site generators and wrote up a little like bash script thing that will generate like 1, 10, 100, 1,000, 100,000 gibberish markdown files with metadata, and then shoots them through the SSG with like minimal templating and stuff, just to measure their build speed. And it's really interesting data. I don't want to ruin it too much yet, but Go is like the fastest thing that's ever been. Go is just ridiculous in how speedy it is as a language. It just crushes. Hugo just crushes build speed.
Well, but it comes with it like a templating language build. JavaScript had a templating language, we'd be a lot faster, I don't know. Seems like an apples to,
So the GitHub thing, though,
rocket like ships comparison.
This is shout out to the gang at Calibre. They released an action. So GitHub Actions, you can just write your own. It's not a difficult thing to do. You just make this little XML, this little YAML file, that's like, do this crap, please, just run it, and it will. You'd be like, run it on Ubuntu, run this NPM, whatever. But yeah. There's also a marketplace. So you can be like, it uses this action. So then you have to write even less code because somebody else maintains this like marketplace action thing you can run. It's like commoditizing CI, it's pretty cool, I think. But, they've made this image optimized one and I was like, I'm going to try it. Let me just get it into a thing, And it's so clever. Yeah. You're like, I only want this to run on pull requests and whatever, and it just does it. It was like 12 lines of code that I just copied into a .github folder in the repo, and then you do a pull request and it optimizes all the images and then makes a comment on the PR that says these are the images that we optimized for you. Then you got to pull again because it like committed the re-optimized images,
Sure, yeah.
Well, it's so clever, and that guarantees that every image in your project is going to be optimized.
That seems like the best place to optimize, like at the pull request, because if you have a good branching strategy, if you're just committing to master all the time, maybe that doesn't work. But like at the pull request level, then you you're kind of like you're gatekeeping, I guess, but you're like trying to say, hey, before this comes in, we want to like do minimal due diligence and make sure that this got
think of the checklist down. That's it. But now that you've done that, it's easy to start an obsession, right? You're like, we got to run this through Lighthouse or run it through SpeedCurve CLI or something, run a synthetic test and get some numbers on perf to make sure you didn't screw the pooch on perf, run it through an accessibility tester tool, make sure that you get all green checks out of that thing. Run it through all your minifiers and all that, although that probably happened client side. It depends on where, but I really like the idea of like making it so easy to do all of those things that just everybody does it. It just becomes like a natural part of all build processes. Like, yeah, just run those things. Of course you run those things.
Yeah, of course everyone knows when you deploy, you look at the list of images and check them off. We should just normalize that. It'd be cool.
So I'm kind of working on it. It's been in my brain a lot, and visual testing too, because there's those tools have gotten better too. Like, please take a screenshot of what this URL looks like, and compare it to what that URL on master looks like.
Yeah,
tell me if it's different. Maybe I'll just be like, yeah, that's fine, I changed it, or maybe I'll be like, whoa, whoops.
I would love a list of whether GitHub Actions or CIs or anything like that. Like I installed this and it makes my life better. I would love a list of those, not because sometimes you'll set up a whole CI for like testing or whatever and it'll fail and it's just chucking errors and deployments blocked and everyone's mad. So you turn it off and you deploy it. And
been there. Yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, I would love I integrated this action or this build process and it made my life better. I would love like a blog post on that. Like, here's something here's five build processes I've used that made my life better. I would love a post on that.
You didn't go overboard with it. You know, you need stuff that's deterministic, I think, or at least as close as you can. You know, if you write 200 integration tests, unfortunately, as awesome as I think they are, you're going to have random failures. And then as soon as you're in the territory of having random failures, you kind of stop caring. You're like, oh, whatever, that one failed again. I don't know, just deploy it. Who cares, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you need like, that's where the like, it made my life better. And not like, I'm so obsessed with whatever. I'm trying to think of like I wanted to count all the points in all my SVGs. So I set up a CI. That doesn't matter to me. Like, I want like very like, you know, like, I don't know. I installed this. It made my life better. And it was, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Guillermo had a blog post about this the other day. He said, you know, if I'm still talking about integration test, he wrote one, you know, or it implied that that's a good, it goes to your homepage. It checks the title. Does it have the title that it expects to have that says like code pen in it or whatever? Done. You know, like if that works, a lot of stuff went right. Your dev server booted up. It returned an HTML document. The title was there. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. Hey, we got a question in from Hawks Philworth writes in, how do you stop yourself from becoming blind to those build errors warnings that you can live with? Just kind of, how do you?
I don't know. I want none. I want no false positives.
Yeah. I have a client and they run, you know, it's like the test, but it'll like block the commit, you know, where does it happen? It's a pre-commit hook. Yeah. Pre-push hook or whatever that is. I think that's commit. But so it's kind of frustrating because like you'll code something, you'll change a doc, like the change log or a document, and then you'll like just get pushed that up and it's like fail. And you're like, well, why? You know, and it's like, oh, I need to like NPM install. Somebody went through and NPM installed something. So I have to update NPM to run the test correctly.
Oh, right.
That's fine. I'll do that. And, it, you know, but it slows down my day, but like, it's fine. But, I think like, you know, there is like, just hitting that failure, I'm like a little, you know, you get salty or like sour about it. You're just like, you're not my friend. You're my active enemy. But I don't know how you do that. Maybe these robots need faces, these bots, and they're like, I don't know, like Buddy Christ, kind of like trying to help.
Like, are interesting because they're at like a different level. They happen on your local machine, not the CI machine. Not the
big cloud. Yeah, and that, it would be more salty later if it was happening later. Like, I would be double, triple salty. So
yeah, I think we do it for some things like prettier. I think we do it at two levels. So we have a pre-commit hook does it, but then the CI thing does it too, like just in case, like we don't ever want to pull code and hit save and then all of a sudden you're responsible for five changes that prettier made, you know, because somebody else didn't. So it like it just this constantly prettifies everything.
Hopefully they're using the same config, or
well, yeah,
if they weren't,
well that's
that would
that's
be a nightmare,
a prettier battle. Somebody should set up. That would be great to run a cron job where, if with two competing prettier configs, just on the hour every hour, they just fight back and forth.
Oh god, that'd be great. I'm sweating. And then Visual Studio Code comes along. Hey, I can do this. I got plugins. Just like, oh god, man, not you. You're great and all, but we don't want that. So.
Well, there's Josh too. You know, he has got this funny moment, I think, in the talk where he's like, well, we brought some people on the team. She was huge on spreadsheets, prioritized stuff in her spreadsheet, and then like zooms into one column and he's like, and there's the wireframe.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was, you know, interesting. Funny. Josh is like, let's all quit designing and just do spreadsheets. I thought that was really compelling. I somebody who loves to Notion. I thought that was a very compelling talk. So just get rid of design and do spreadsheets. I didn't get to see all of Josh's talk, but I think that was what he was kind of getting at. So,
Dave had some slides to make.
I was busy on a webinar preparing for a webinar. We had a plenary session to get ready for the webinar. I'm that's one talk I'm like definitely going back, and of course there's talks tomorrow that I'll be attending. So it's fun, good times here at the. Okay, get rid of spreadsheets and get rid of design and do spreadsheets. Yeah, I think that's good. I think you just everyone tweet that out. That's a good. That's the summation of the talk, I think. So, yeah. This was fun. So thank you, Smashing. If anyone has any questions, here's your time to, we technically have like another hour, so we can just sit here for another hour. But I think this might conclude our webinar here. I feel like we've addressed all the value propositions that we were here to address. Yeah, I can put these, I'll put these slides up on Noticed. It'll be up there later today. I'll do it right now.
Goal-oriented model networking needs.
Please, clouds, for your business. We appreciate it. And
that sounds like economically sound, out-of-the-box thinking, Dave.
We'll sign your enterprise contract today. All right, we gotta go. Thank you, telecommuter, for watching this on your hop in, and we really appreciate it. And thank you for downloading this in a podcatcher. If you did that, and follow us at Shop Talk Show on Twitter for tens of tweets a month. And if you hate your job, over shoptalkshow.com/jobs, there's a job board. You can check it out. People want to hire people like you. And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
That was the Smashing ShopTalkShow.com.